Blog
You're on.
Radio.
With Jack Jodell and Wayne Johnson, and we have a wonderful guest with us today, the fabulous Sybil Brunson, or John Burke, who has been out there speaking about what's wrong, what's right, and an activist from Stonewall on to the moment, a New York City resident and entertainer, and has had many shows of his own. I really thank you for joining us today, John.
No, thank you. I'm very proud to have been asked. Thank you to be with all three of you today.
Yeah, we're glad to have you, John, and looking forward to what you can contribute today. Those kids yesterday were awesome, weren't they? Just incredible. They were so inspiring.
So proud of their young boy.
Yeah, I was very impressed. One of the things that I do to subsidize my performing is I actually do life coaching of sorts with college and high school tours that come through New York. And it's a course I created when I was teaching at the Fashion Institute of Technology. I call it Career Equals Character. And I work with kids from 15 through 25 years of age. And we hear so much complaining about the younger generation being entitled or self-involved or buried in their texting and everything and their Twittering. And what I found so amazing was how in touch with the really serious issues those kids were, how articulate they were, how plugged in, how committed they were. It gives me all the hope in the world. Anyone who is jaded or cynical about the condition of this country and its new generation, watch that, multiply each of those voices by thousands, and notice that they're all races, all religions, all
exactly.
sexual persuasions, and you're looking at the new century, the new millennium, in which old white guys like me are going to be asked to step to the side and participate in a team as opposed to being in charge all the time.
Right. Good point.
The millennia of white men dictating everything to women, to blacks, to Jews. It's over with. And thank God I wash my hands of my own demographic. I feel like I'm Pontius Pilate. I stand up, I ask for the basin of water, and I say, I leave it to you kids now. You come up with the solutions. I'm happy to turn this over to you, but it's a happier ending as opposed to the biblical one. But I'm washing my hands of the crap that my contemporaries continue to do in the Senate and in the Congress and in that damn White House. I'm so sick
of
that thing. I'm so sick of it. And I complain about that every week. Yeah. I want to tell you guys one more thing that I said to Gwen today. I'm trying to look up all their names because I really want to get the cast of that core cast of characters, those 12 kids from Parkland. I believe that all of them are wonderfully articulate. The ones that were on Meet the Press today or whatever were so articulate, wonderful. And I'm not going to point out specific ones. I'll let you people all select your favorite stars in that play. But I believe that we're looking at a couple of 17 and 18-year-old people who could be running for the Senate in 10 to 20 years and presidential in 20 to 30
years.
Let
us hope so.
There's a couple of kids that were speaking. Yeah, at 17 years of age, they were speaking and thinking, and I just was astounded at how articulate they were.
And focused.
Do you know what?
I love it.
Do you know what really impressed the heck out of me? In 1963, as a kid, I listened to MLK's, in the same place. Yeah, at the same place these kids were at yesterday. And then his granddaughter stepped on stage. With a white, blonde, blue-eyed girl at her side holding her hand and said, "We are going to be a great generation." And I lost the guy.
Yeah. And Martin Luther King Jr. would have loved that moment because he preached cooperation between the races. And he wasn't just only for black people or only for, you know, whatever. He was universal. He was a great man.
Yeah.
He saw that moment, gentlemen. He saw that moment. And yesterday it actually happened. And I was in awe. The cigarette fell out of my mouth. I went, oh my gosh. And I have to tell you, I listened to so much of what I call bitchtivism going on in the social networks and such. But I remind you guys, and I know you know this, it's been the social networks that have given these kids the platform they require to do what they're doing and what they've done. And they aren't quitting.
No, they're focused. They're determined. I love their determination and their focus and their energy. Man, they are reinvigorating the entire proper agenda. I'll say not leftist or rightist, but I'll say the proper agenda for this country, the common sense agenda. And it's focused against gun violence, which you couldn't do a better job at. And they're doing a great job, and I applaud them mightily. And I hope they get every success in the world on their efforts.
Well, they're coming
I love the old. I love the old expression, happy warrior. I love it about Al Smith. Yeah. I love it about Franklin Roosevelt. And by the way, I just want to get my credentials out of the way early because I am from that long line, a long, long line of Republicans. I was raised in a Republican household. I was a New England Republican. When my folks moved to Ohio, they were the first people in either part of my family that had moved out of New England and moved to Ohio, and that was Republican, Republican, Republican. But this was Abraham Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, Eisenhower Republican world. This
it's
was
like Wayne's version.
I have a family history, the family belonging to the Republican Party because they were from West Virginia. So when West Virginia seceded from Virginia, all the Johnsons were Republicans because Lincoln was Republican. Of course, they were fighting, saying, and behind the fact that, no, you cannot own another man. But unfortunately, the Republican Party's been kidnapped, bastardized to what it is today.
Well, that whole revolution that took place starting in 1968, where the parties basically flipped positions, you know, I mean, it's just that's a fascinating thing that happened in this country. Speaking of 1960,
started it all. He was the one who lit the fuse, Barry Goldwater, in 64.
Right. 64, yeah.
Right, and then 64. It really went into full speed after that, and then with Reagan. The thing I was going to say about 1968 was I was living in Ohio and a college student, I'll give away my age here, when Kent State took place. And, of course, when you went to college in Ohio, you had friends at Antioch and Oberlin, all the great schools like that, Wittenberg, and then, of course, at Kent State. And I was in the swirl of that, that whole revolutionary thing in which, you know, the younger generation was so anti-war. And that went all over the place. The Young Americans for Freedom was Republican, but those people, and I had been a member of that for a short time. I never joined the SDS, but we quickly got disenchanted because we were seeing through the Vietnam War and all of the deception there. And it's taken 50 years now for PBS to be able to be in a position to put on a 10-part series about the Vietnam War and to really show all of the mendacity involved in that shocking waste of people and ecology,
and money,
the material. I mean, the natural resources to have dug up that much iron and dumped it in Vietnam, spend that much petroleum. When people talk about war and injustice, if they're too stupid to see the human loss and the moral loss, the immorality, if you're just going to talk about that almighty dollar, then talk about it. The almighty dollars that we wasted and the wealth and the natural resources we wasted on something that was never, ever going to be an option for us. It's shocking. And these kids are already protesting and seeing through that almighty, I won't say the F word, effing, dollar,
dollar
that drives everything. It's much more important for everyone to be armed like the Pentagon, in their grocery stores. It's like we should all. Why don't we all have bazookas at this point? If the NRA wants us all armed, why don't,
yeah,
why
I've
don't
been
we
saying
all
that for a long time.
Guns?
Why don't we have our own atomic bombs? This is insane.
Yeah, exactly. Clearly, the Second Amendment guarantees us to have everything. Well, if we can go above a musket, then we can go above a Winchester. Let's go to a rocket launcher. I want a nuclear weapon because when I go to the grocery store and there's an open carry policy, I believe as a WASP and as a New Englander and as a person whose relatives came off the Mayflower, I've decided that I'm the best person in the grocery store. And what I want is I want a nuclear weapon to trump your bump stock. That's what I want.
There you go.
If that's where we're going, then let's go for it. Let's shoot up every post office, every high school, every McDonald's. Let's all shoot. And the person with the biggest penis and atomic weapon wins. That's right. It's ridiculous.
It's insane. It really is.
And again, let's get the old effing men out of politics. Patriarchy.
Too much macho nonsense.
What it is. It's patriarchy, and all it has been for 6,000 years is resource accumulation, war, and mine is better than yours. There was once and future king who said, might for right, not might because I am right, you know, I'm right because I've got the might.
Right.
It's absolutely stunning to me that it's always the kids, and we should have seen this coming, really. We should have seen this coming, that it was going to take children who stood up. I'm going to tell you something, gentlemen. There is a white light vortex in the state of Florida for the first time in my life, and I am so proud of them. I am so proud of them. That's my old neighborhood, and I am so proud of them. But they marshaled in less than a month, they marshaled over 800,000 people to be in D.C.
Incredible.
There were 3,000 kids on the steps of the Capitol in South Carolina. There were kids in Berlin. There were kids in London. There were kids
all over the world,
over the planet. Yeah.
They sparked a movement all over the world. I have the highest degree of admiration for those kids. Incredible what they achieved. And they're not done yet.
They are very brave.
Their bravery can't be underestimated because we have to remember, well, first of all, you're in Minneapolis Wayne, you're in Columbus, which Columbus is lovely and has wonderful liberal streets in it. And then, you know, Gwen, you're in Florida, which, you know, most Northerners think of Florida as being Miami Beach and Jewish and intellects moving from the Northeast. But in fact,
there's a lot of rednecks down there.
Alabama. But what I was going to say, as a New Yorker, we take, and I'm gay, we take so much for granted being in New York because we feel that we're in a safe place. We're in a place of many different races and religions and intellects and all of that. But as a performer, and especially as a performer of Sybil Brunchan, I remember a time when I would never dream of walking down the street as Sybil Brunchan going to a nightclub at 1 a.m. to do a show or something. Because
They would have thrown you in jail. Yeah, that's right.
Or you could be killed, period.
You could be killed, too. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But what I was going to say about these kids, and this is something that we should all really honor and remember about them, many of these kids are not in urban areas. They commuted to Washington, D.C. from, you know, Podunk, Maryland, or Podunk, Delaware.
Yes.
They commute. When they're going to a city like Columbus or Minneapolis, they're also coming in from Buttfolk, Idaho, or, they're coming from places where
Paducah or whatever, you know.
Exactly. Their political opinion right now is not popular, and they are even doing this in families where other relatives are not happy that their nephew is one of the ringleaders for the March for Life.
They'll come around, I think. You know, I think one of the biggest things here is that to note is that these kids, they are not bought out by corporate America, and corporate America ruins so many leaders and politicians. It just, they buy them out, and the next thing you know, they're tainted, and they're voting a certain way instead of the right way.
I agree with you completely. And back to these kids, you're absolutely right. They have not been bought out, nor are they being swayed by pressure within their towns or even
yes.
their families.
Again, and even by parties. They don't even respond to parties. They want to make it – it's an American issue with them, and good for them.
Yes. But I think this is – I think that this is the same issue as being a gay or transgender kid. I think that what is happening is that these issues are finally not going to be able to be squashed under the sidewalk anymore
yes.
or hidden
yes.
in a basement or in an attic. People are – the old expression is the world indeed only spins forward. It does not spin backward. And
good
even
point.
Though sometimes we can have a situation like a Trump being elected or whatever, the bottom line is this, that somehow it's as irrefutable as the sun rising in the east. It is as irrefutable as the flowers coming up in the spring after the most brutal winter.
Yes.
Life
progress marches on no matter
what.
Continues
to move forward. Even if it's yes. creeping, it moves forward somehow. Something
good
always
point.
Seems to be moving forward. And that
no,
is
No, I close
the
every show, John, with the push – with the phrase, we've got to push forward. That's
yes.
my stock phrase, and I believe that so wholeheartedly. You can't look backward. The only thing you can do by looking backward is learn from it. You can't live in that era. You got to keep
no.
pushing forward.
We certainly can learn from it, though, because I'm a big
oh, yeah.
believer in history and studying
Oh,
history.
Yeah, me too.
But
I
agree that for people to try to hold on to sad, forlorn, bigoted notions from 10 years ago or 20 years ago, you know, I talk to kids all the time, and they are amazed to remember or to learn that the movie Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, which came out in 1968, was banned 68? In all sorts of states,
okay.
and that issue – a black and a white relationship was the end of the world in this country. That was considered
oh my God.
It was,
to be,
was, yeah.
That was considered to be communism. That was considered to be Hollywood being sold to Satan. That was
it's
Satan
amazing
marching across. And what I love about that movie is that it was about a white girl in San Francisco born to lovely liberal parents. And she was not falling in love with an inner city youth with dreadlocks. She was falling in love with the most physically beautiful black man in the United States,
yeah.
who also happened to be a United Nations awarded doctor. The character was supposed to be a doctor who had been recognized internationally for his work in medicine. And so it was this heightened Superman who happened to be black. It wasn't even a challenging issue. And that was the end of the world. The South was convinced that Hollywood had been taken over by Satan himself.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
ignorance
wait, wait
is pervasive throughout
minute.
Certain areas of the country.
I've sat at the bar with Lucy, okay? Don't be shaken off on Lucy. I mean, the bringer of the light, because, you know, there's always a balance. Through all of this, we have all been so upset. And John, I know you've been very upset. I see what you really should read John's posts on his page.
I try to make it humorous, though, Gwen. Gwen, I try to make it humorous.
Tell us the name of your post, John.
Well,
tell
Sybil
us the name
Brunson.
Of your blog site.
Sybil Brunson has first of all. Sybil Brunson as a character, as a living character, is on Facebook
right.
and Twitter and Instagram. And then there's a couple of pages, which are Sybil Says, which is SYBILSEZ.com, SybilSays.com. And then there's also SybilBrunson.com, which are the two websites. And I'm on YouTube, and I've got old videos of when I was on cable, back when cable was only 10 channels and was a little box on top of your TV across the room with no remote. I don't know if you gentlemen are old enough to remember that.
Oh, yeah. I'm almost 65, so, yeah. It means about
the
same.
So you remember when cable first came, and in New York City, for instance, we had to request cable, first of all, on your block. So some city blocks didn't have cable. It was one block at a time. Then when it came to your block, you had to beg your landlord to get it into your building. And then once it was in your building, then you had that sad little box across the room on the under the TV, which had 10 buttons that said A through J. They weren't numbered. Do you remember? It was channel
and
A.
And do you remember the early days of cable, it was supposed to be self-sustaining and self-paying, and you didn't have a glut of commercials. Now we have a record amount of commercials, even though there's more. It's just it's really gone commercial. It's just disgusting.
Well, and what I love about cable, and this is where Ted Turner and these other people were so smart, they recognized that it probably wouldn't stay only A through J, and they recognized that eventually it would really be take off, and that's when HBO finally happened, and the Weather Channel. I remember reading about how Ted Turner was mocked in cocktail parties about people come up to him and say, Ted, darling, who's going to want to, this is Sybil Brunson speaking, Ted, darling, who's going to want to watch the weather at 3 in the morning? I mean, people don't want to need the weather at 3 in the morning. Morning, darling. Of course, I have insomnia, so perhaps I would watch nice Jim Cantore if he just would stop screaming about the latest hurricane. But I, so who knew? And of course, now we not only have a food channel, we have two food channels because there was too much food programming. They needed two food channels. We have 10,000 channels now, and that
it's
was
incredible.
Cable. But I was on cable back in 1985 when it was me and Robin Bird. Al Goldstein, Robin Bird, and me. You know who Robin Bird is, right, of course, with the nude, the sex channels and everything?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
Dead silence out there. Columbus Avenue. God. I mean, Columbus never got Robin Bird with her macrame bikini. But there were even public access channels that were sex channels where you could
see
soft
that,
porn and everything.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, I remember that. That was shocking. Yeah.
I mean,
what
and look
hell?
How the world has changed, and our technology has opened up more and more and more doors, just as tweeting and Instagram. These kids are using the newest technology to promote great things, and that's the whole thing. Is that for every step back we take, we always seem to take two steps forward. We always
good point.
Our technology, you know, it's easy to point at it and say, "Oh my God, that's the enemy." That's the enemy. And yes, there are tables of eight kids who are just tweeting and not talking to each other. But there's some kid at some table who's tweeting a message of hope of some sort to Asia or to across the country. People are also using technology for greatness and genius, and that's what we're seeing now. We're seeing that happen also. It's all a part of an amazing new millennium.
It's a good non-commercial use. It hasn't been perverted by commercial influence. It's a good non-perversial commercial use of the medium, and it's to be encouraged rather than discouraged, even though you can't make money off it, you know. And all that nonsense,
John. You might be interested to know that Here Be Monsters here, and it started with a blog, but there were several of us who are still together online over on Facebook at Journey with Roundtree 7. We began a blog together, but we all got together through just blogging and finding each other on blog sites and knowing that we were all of the same, you know, mind and of the same need to get the truth out there and to put out the facts as we were seeing them. It was quite a glut of us, and most of us are still up on. I've gone over to radio to do what I do on this, but everything else I've got going on, except for my personal Facebook page, and you see, I do bitch like hell there.
I think it's wonderful. I think it's great that you three have stuck together through this. That you guys
we became
are
acquainted
still working
through blog.
Together.
That's right. I've been blogging now. I think it's my 10th year. It's been a long time, and Wayne's been at it for quite a while too. And that's how I got to know Wayne. And we got to know Gwen that way, too.
I met my producers, the people that put together SybilSays.com. Steve Buescher is someone that I worked with back in Cincinnati when my gay cable network shows were syndicated across the country. Steve Buescher and Mark Bailey and Roger Eikenberry, all of them were there. And Steve Buscher has put together my website, SybilSays.com, and Yuri Kushner and Ray Kirstein are people that I did a for the Metropolitan Community Church, I did for years a fundraiser. I used to do monthly comedy bingos and trivia nights for them, as I still am doing. I do shows all over the country for different charities mm-hmm. and fundraisers. And Yuri Kushner and Ray Kirstein are the ones who came to me and set up SybilBrunchen.com for me. And so it's so funny how we make these friendships with people, and then our friendships develop, and we evolve and metamorphosize into this kind of world in which now we're on, you know, a talk blog radio situation. And it's so wonderful to build those bridges, especially for me.
Absolutely.
Because at 56, I buried 99% of the people I ever knew in the AIDS crisis. And when I made new friends, I lost most of them. I buried the great loves of my life, you know, back then, and friends and family. I lost everyone to the AIDS crisis. And now to be a survivor and to have this whole new, again, this new decade and new millennia of people and survivors my age. Look, we look at each other. I have people on Facebook all the time and on my websites say, "My God, I just found you on Facebook. You're still alive. You're still around." Sybil Brunchen is, because the people that I perform for at Studio 54 or the Palladium or Limelight, those audiences all died. I almost feel like Sally Bowles in Cabaret, in the sense that the whole world of parties and booze and drugs and music and fashion vanished, and all the players vanished. Everyone went Michael Bennett and Perry Ellis, but multiply them by thousands of people. All of that creativity, all of that love, all that friendship. All
John,
that
where
music.
Did you first start out? Give us your origin here, if you would, for people who don't know.
I was born in New England, moved to Ohio, and then realized that I was gay, and I hitchhiked here on the East Coast, up and down the East Coast in 1969, and saw Washington, D.C., and saw Cape Cod and Provincetown and New York and everything, and was here for all sorts of stuff then, went back to the University of Toledo, and then finally left college and moved to New York in the dead of winter in 1973-74 with $25 in my pocket, a raincoat, and two suitcases, and a pillow.
Wow, you made it happen, man. Good for you.
And I had a friend of a friend of a friend who was going to let me sleep on his living room floor, and it was because I was a good cook. And I didn't realize that he was like – I became basically his butler for a little while there. And I just scrounged my way through life, and I've had many, many, many different adventures and jobs in New York while I was trying to build my career and do the different things that an artist comes to New York for.
How did you get into performing?
Well, the way I always wanted to be an actor. I always wanted to be all the things that actors get to play. I wanted to be an archaeologist when I was five and all sorts of different things. But I realized along the way that the best way to be a heart surgeon and an archaeologist and all those things that I thought were fascinating and that I loved reading about and studying was to be an actor and a writer and a director. And so that's where I went to theater school at the University of Toledo, which had an incredible theater department. And then I came to New York. And the one thing that I don't want to bore anyone with this, but I was very waspy. And waspy people, when they take a job as a waiter, they don't usually quit 2 weeks later just because they got a national tour. So one of my biggest problems was that every time I took a job, I felt guilty if I got cast in something. So I wouldn't go. And, of course, two or three weeks after being a waiter, I would always end up as a manager of the restaurant, or I'd end up being the maitre d', or – I worked at New York Hospital, and I started out as a clerk, and I became the floor manager. Whenever I took a job, I became very responsible. I'm a Yankee. So the one thing that did happen was, even though once in a while I would leave town, I'd go to a Shakespeare festival or a national tour or something, the one thing that happened was I was very good at improv. And I happened to be in a couple of different plays locally that I was allowed to be in. I could rehearse at night, and then I could keep a 9-to-5 job during the day. And I got into a couple of off-Broadway plays, which connected me to people like Harvey Fierstein and Leonard Bernstein and Terrence McNally and stuff. And the fluke of it was that I was improvising during interviews on these plays, and people saw that I was funny. and I accidentally created the character Sybil Brunson, which allowed me to then do nightclubs, the big nightclubs, but not leave town. So I could keep my waiter job or my bartender job or my restaurant manager job, but I could also, on my nights off, go and headline at the Limelight or at Studio.
Wow, cool.
Or the Palladium. And that character took off. The problem was, typically, I was ahead of my time, because nowadays, 18-year-olds think RuPaul invented drag and that, you know, all of this is the beginning with him. And there were people like Charles Pierce and Charles Bush and, you know, Charles Ludlam and Lynn Carter and me who were doing this 35 years ago, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so we were sort of ahead of our time, and we didn't luck out and get, you know, the multi-million dollar contracts that people like, you know, RuPaul have today. So it's timing works both ways. It's a knife that cuts both ways.
Yeah.
But that's where I started, and I took that character, and I happened to have been a bodybuilder at that time. And that was even funnier, because if you look at the photographs of Sybil Brunson, you see she's in, you know, Christian Lacroix gowns and strapless with a butch haircut and beautiful makeup and jewelry. But she's got a 50-inch chest and a 29-inch waist. So it's kind of like, oh, my God. That's why Scavullo photographed, because he was watching me on TV. Francesco Scavullo and his manager, Eric Perkins, was watching me on TV and said, that is a new way that drag is being done. You know, it, look at that.
Right.
That's not like someone trying to be Marilyn Monroe or Diana Ross or Bette Midler. That's a whole new creature there with, with their own name and everything and her own adventures. So anyway, that's what
got said.
Well,
that,
very interesting, John, that you excelled at every level.
It should be said, John, that Sybil is very beautiful. If you take a look at the photos and you see that, it's not.
I'm glad you said
that,
Gwen. As a woman, I'm glad you said that. And this is the thing.
He's not
just
the character. He is the full channel, of
Sybil. And I didn't want her to be mocking women. It's almost like what Dustin Hoffman said in Tootsie. Remember that scene with Bill Murray when he's fixing her hair on the wig stand at the table? He says, no, I went shopping today. And he says about how vicious women were to each other when there was a sale on a dress. And he said, I want her to be attractive. I feel I owe it to Dorothy to make her as beautiful as I can. And when I first did Sybil Brunson, I thought it was going to be a one-shot deal. It was just a fluke that I was doing one day on cable TV as a joke. And then my friends and I sat down when it looked like when they booked me. Lou Maletta booked me and said, no, I want you to do this every week, and I want you to. And we talked, and I said, I don't want any woman to think that I'm making fun of her the way Milton Berle made his character funny and homely.
Yeah.
I wanted her to be beautiful, and the comedy would come from the fact that she was witty or outspoken or whatever, and that at the very worst, she would be built in that amazing physical body and then complain that she had been pinched on the bottom in the grocery store. So it would be this weird thing where she would say she would be victimized, as beautiful women were, but she would also then – she would tell you that, but be equipped in such a way that she would be powerful in spite of herself. And I never – and that was why when I first started doing Sybil and she first began appearing in nightclubs and stuff, I loved it when not only women came up to me – but lesbian women came up to me and said, she's really beautiful, or she's really pretty, and she's her dresses and her makeup are done. And I would say yes, because the point, it's not about making fun of a woman. It's not about wearing a ridiculous wig that no woman would have hair that was 3 feet high. No woman would wear – I didn't know any women who wore feather boas.
Yeah,
I didn't know any women that – went around dressed like a clown. No, the whole idea was that she was this lovely woman, like an Auntie Mame character or a Dolly Levi character, that she was wonderful and full of life and love.
And that is exactly what you portray. And as one girl to another, to Sybil, you are one of the girls. And the only reason I say that is because, as you are pointing so directly to right now, you have the heart for it. You have heart for it.
You know, I'm an Aquarius.
No, it seems to me, John, it seems to me you're in touch with both your male and the female side of your psyche, and everybody has that. And some males think, oh, I just got to be this way all the time, and they don't realize that they have a female side too that can and should pop through once in a while. You know,
everybody
in the same
has
way with women.
All the sides. And that's the other thing about me. People say, well, you're really a Democrat, aren't you? You're really a Democrat. You're really a liberal. And I say, well, I'll tell you something. I have some very conservative opinions, and I have some very progressive and revolutionary opinions. I'm one of those people that blogs on, like, there was a whole issue this past week about mailboxes being broken into and mail being stolen. And I posted on my page comically. I said, you know what the solution is to that? Find the people that are breaking into the mailboxes, bring them to the public square, and cut off their hands in front of everyone. And that's the solution. And people were like, they laughed, and everyone was civil brunch. And like,
well, that would certainly create an impact.
You know what? Bernie Madoff, the same thing. White-collar crime is so innocent.
Oh, yeah.
The consequences of white-collar crime, the ripple effect of white-collar crime. I love how people giggle about it and sort of, well, it's just white-collar crime. What we really need to do is we need to execute drug dealers. Execute drug dealers. My God, if you're going to execute some Oxycontin dealer in Staten Island, you need to take Bernie Madoff out and set him on fire. You need to stuff him with nails. The consequences of what he and that kind of person do throughout society is overwhelming.
Yes.
Third grade school teachers losing their credit unions because the consequences, the domino effect of a Bernie Madoff or that kind of – those people need to be executed. And people say, my God, you're sort of extremely right-wing and extremely left-wing. I don't know. I'm an Aquarius. I believe
they've got to be called to account and punished for their excesses and for how they negatively affect other people in the society. And that's just not happening anywhere near as often as it should.
I am appalled by people who abuse children, animals, the elderly. I think that I am implacable. I am a bully. I'm telling you right now, I'm a bully, and the people I bully are the bullies on playgrounds, the playground of life. I believe in absolutely squashing people who are cruel to animals, to children, to the elderly, people who oppress women, wife batterers. Oh, my God. People who try to squelch the hopes and dreams of others, I am their worst nightmare. Their
good
worst
for you,
nightmare.
Man. I'm with you 100%. That's awesome.
Well,
and it's across the board.
Awesome.
If you're a millionaire, if you're a billionaire and you're trying to crush somebody, you are dead to me. If you're some slum kid in a gang, you are dead to me. There is no justice on those issues is equal because we have way too much injustice in this world. We have people trying to crush women, crush children, crush animals. It's like it has got to stop. And that's where I really am outspoken. And that's where I put my comedy all the time. I have a very dark sense of humor. So,
good for you, man. I'm going to look into this.
This might be the moment to actually say, too, that in the next coming weeks, you'll be able to listen to John and Sybil on Here Be Monsters, whichever night of the week other than Sunday he puts up, he's going to come on air and do his own version of whatever Sybil John does days on
Gwen
radio.
Gwen and I have been talking about this because I haven't done cable for a few years now, so we're going to start a live broadcast, and I think it's wonderful that she announced this today because Don Imus is finally retiring. He's announced, made nationwide today that he's going to be retiring. So I'm hoping to take his place and be the aggressive version of Don Imus. And
that would be
something. Will be on. And we're negotiating this. We have to spend a couple of weeks getting it up and running. We're picking a theme song and a name. Actually, I would love for your listeners to send in suggestions on titles for this, some good title for the show. We'll figure out all sorts of stuff. But I want to do a live show, and I want you guys to be my guests on my show, and I want to take calls from the home audience, and we're going to figure out how to do it. We might do it as a visual broadcast, as a podcast or something.
I am
and
so
it's carte blanche.
It's another evolution, and I like
blanche.
That.
My working title right now is Carte Blanche, and that means that the home audience will have to look that up. But it will be on everything. The whole idea is that it would cover anything. So I'd be willing to take phone calls because I'm a good cook. I would take phone calls about recipes. I would take phone calls about home helpful hints. And I would also, discuss politics over a really good beef bourguignon recipe. You know, I mean, let's go for it all. Let's go for it.
Wayne, you were going to say something.
The joy of life, that joie de vivre, is about burning brightly for everything. It means getting angry about the things you should be angry about. It means throwing your arms around someone that you just met and you're saying goodnight. You know, after a dinner party, you see someone and you say, oh, my God, it was such a pleasure to meet you. And instead of just shaking their hands, there's that moment that just sweeps over you and you give them a hug and you say, I can't wait to see you again. It was such a pleasure to meet you. I believe that we're supposed to burn brightly forever.
Good point.
Injustice, beauty, joy, love, all of it. We're supposed to burn our calories. And it's like Jack London who said, I'd rather be ashes than dust. It's like we're supposed to burn ourselves up and use ourselves up for life. Use ourselves fully to the hilt. And that's how I live. And, you know, sometimes it's not popular
Mama.
To be that vivid, you know.
Well, Mummy, you know, as Mame said, it really is. Life is a banquet, and most poor sons of bitches are starving. It's true.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Mame said it. Well, that was a wonderful quote from Mame. Most people are waffling around. They don't sit down at the table of life and really sample all the amazing things that are there. And you don't have to be rich to do it. As a matter of fact, most of the rich people that I've ever worked with are so busy being distracted by the money and the desperation of acquisition and trying to get. It's like, hey, pal, you can walk down the street and see the tulips coming up in some flower bed today for free. I'm looking out my bay window, my famous bay window. It's always, I put it on Facebook all the time. I'm looking at a flower bed across the street where there's still some snow under this tree, but there are shoots coming up through the snow. And the green of those shoots is like psychedelic. It is so beautiful to look at.
Yeah.
And that is what life is. It's the beauty of those kids yesterday being in the cold, speaking out in those blazing sunny days about what they expect adults to do. Children telling adults what they expect them to do.
Making sense. They're making common sense out of it. They're not distracted by nonsense, you know?
They're tantruming, but not about the fact that they want the new iPad. It's that they're tantruming about the fact that they're stupid adults from that
real
idiot
things.
Rubio, that Marco Rubio and his gang are being told by children, do your job. You are my employee. You're my servant. That's what it means, public servant. You
good
get back
job,
to that.
Kids.
Go get this done. And by the way, if you don't, to hear an 18-year-old say this, and if you don't, you will
We're
be voted
vote
out
you
of
out.
Office. You will be fired. That's
I love
of,
that.
One kid said,
you better get your resumes ready.
Right.
I loved it.
Your resumes ready. That
I
was,
loved
that.
That would be David Hogg, and he is totally geared for getting it done. He's totally geared for walking on from this with purpose.
Oh, yeah.
You can see that.
Yeah, he's my hope. He was being actually too forgiving. I wish he had quoted Donald Trump and said, by the way, if you do not get this done, to quote your idiot boss, you're fired. Remember that was his mantra on his stupid-ass show, you're fired. I wish I had the money right now to put together a T-shirt with nine of the faces, Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, all of them, and then under it say, you're fired. In bold print, you are fired.
You know, you could probably make a lot of money off that idea, my friend.
Yeah.
You could. I'm sure there will be a lot of buyers that would love to have a T-shirt like that.
Well, I'm one of those people that gives my ideas away, and then somebody 2 weeks later got it. And it's like, oh, God. You know, I'm like the – I'm like the Jackie Gleason of the gay world, of the drag world. I'm like Ralph Cramden. I come up with the idea, but I never seem to make money.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like the Ralph Cramden with a handy-dandy vegetable peeler or whatever. I just, it never worked out. But I think that we are, I think there's so much, it's why I've connected with Gwen in such a short time on Facebook. Here's another situation where we connected through Facebook and we become these soulmates. We've, you know, connected in on so many levels. And I'm proud to be part of her new stable there at MGM. You know,
oh, yeah.
would you like to do it?
We are so blessed that we've been intertwined with her life.
But she said, would you like to do a blog? Would you like to do an online podcast? I said, oh, that would be so exciting. It'd be like the old days when I did all the different TV shows. I did 5 different TV shows. And they ran for years. And, you know, one was a game show called Be My Guest. And it was a takeoff on What's My Line. And when she approached me on this, I said, oh, my God, so you're asking me to be a part of the MGM stable then. So I'll be on with, you know, my pals Wayne and Jack, who've been at the stable for a long time and can take me to the cafeteria for the first day, the commissary. And there'll be Stanwyck and Streisand and Betty Davis and Wade and Jack. Oh, here comes Gwen.
It sounds very exciting.
Sit on her lap in her office, you know.
Yeah. It sounds very exciting, John. I love the idea.
Jack,
well, it's
Jack Warner.
Yes.
Like, I'm waiting for Wayne and Jack to take me aside
in the corner of the commissary and say, okay, two things. Avoid the tapioca. And then the other thing is to make sure that when Gwen asks you to come to her office privately and she locks the door behind you, you know, be very friendly, and if she wants to pinch your bottom a little bit, just remember, you're going to be in our studio system, and it's going to be great. It's going to be great. But Gwen does expect to pinch bottom, so that's you're going to just have to do that. That's how it is in the studio system of the blogosphere.
Gwen, this is a riot. What'd you say, Wayne?
This show is classic. It is a riot.
It's
poor Louis B. Mayer. You know, Louis B. Mayer and Joan Crawford are spinning in their graves right now. Speaking of Joan Crawford, guys, when you go to my Facebook page, I did a whole 24-hour celebration birthday for Joan Crawford in which I took photographs of her in different movies and put funny captions under them. So you'll have to you'll take a look at those and see what I'm sorry. I was very, very irreverent. I was scolded thoroughly by like 2 or 3 Joan Crawford diehards. The rest of my Facebook 5,000, 8,000 crowd was very flattering and said, oh my God, these are hysterical. But I think that, you know, even Christina Crawford was tickled by what I said. She happens to be one of my Facebook friends, but, you know, there were a couple that were like, a couple of old gay guys who were just like, how can you be so irreverent to our Joanie? You know, so, oh, please. My favorite one is, I think the funniest thing I ever said, even I chuckle at my sense of humor, it's a picture of Faye Dunaway as Joan Crawford, and it's the scene where she's adopting the baby. And she handed the baby, the newborn infant, by the orphanage people. And she's making this horrible smile. And under it, I don't know why I thought this. I looked at it, and I immediately got the caption. It's a picture of Faye Dunaway grinning her horribly and holding this baby in front of her. And it says, the caption was, I like my babies like I like my martinis, shaken and extra dry. It's funnier when you read it, but when you see that face and you look at that, I like my babies like I like my routines, shaken and extra dry. That is like, you know, that's my sense of humor. Very dark, very springtime for Hitler, that kind of sense of humor.
Oh, that's great.
I had occasion to talk to people years ago about how Mel Brooks was thoroughly roasted for coming up with Springtime for Hitler. There were people that were apoplectic about the fact that he would joke about my God, this was the end of the world, and how could he? And he said wisely, even if you don't like Mel Brooks, even if you think his sense of humor is obvious, he said something that was ingenious, and that was that the most devastating weapon you can use against something that's wrong or unjust is laughter. That when you make people laugh at an adversary, you have completely, completely destroyed that adversary.
Yeah, just diminished them.
Diminished them completely. They become forlorn, and it's satire is the most deadly, deadly form of comedy.
Take a look at what happened at that the press conference dinner when Obama made fun
of Trump.
Trump.
Of Chump. Oh, I call him President Dunst Trump.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now you might be a little sad about that, but really in the long run, it's a laugh because let's face it, folks, we had to see this exposure.
You thought they ripped him a new asshole then. Wait till you see this next round that's getting ready to come out.
Everybody tonight is getting ready to run. When we get off air, Sybil, we got to run over to the TV. We got to see AC. But I got to tell you something, guys. Don't get your hoo-ha's up too quickly.
No, they won't have anything real
because
shocking.
I don't think there's going to – I think what it's going to do is just expose her and who she is in a positive spin, if you will, for the American public to digest who the woman actually is. And then, as any good lawyer or business person, and you could ask John about this one, They'll dole it out, won't they, John? They'll give you a snippet here and a snippet there to keep you going. Am I right?
Oh, I think
constant competition with Chump. I love it.
Yeah, I have to say that if the Billy Bush tape didn't sink this nightmare ship a year and a half ago, there's no sinking this. His base. Listen, I lived through Richard Nixon. You know, I lived through
that. We all did,
baby. And it's inconceivable. People back then watched Republicans, my family. I voted for Richard Nixon the first time. I confess openly. I try to let my acquaintances who voted for Trump off the hook by saying, listen, I voted for Richard Nixon the first time around. I voted for Ronald Reagan the first time around. Not twice. I didn't vote for either of them twice, but I did vote for each of them once because I thought it was the better choice. I did not leave the GOP, the Republican Party. The Republican Party left me, not only because I'm gay. That's the least important thing. They left me economically. They're not –
economically, culturally, you name it.
For a Republican. Yeah, I can't. So what I have to say about this whole thing is that, and much to the pundits' horror, Trump's base has congealed into a diamond-hard little jewel. It is absolutely – rock hard, like a diamond. You could show him eating a child in the middle of the street, and they would figure out some way to justify it.
Absolutely.
The Trump apologists and enablers, and that's why all the collateral people, the Rubios and the McConnells and the Ryans, I can't imagine what the conversation is like in their homes because they are stuck. They're stuck on the wrong side, on the wrong end of the bridge, and they've committed themselves to Satan, basically, and there's no way of breaking the deal now.
Well, I think we're going to fall off that bridge come November, starting this November.
Sybil, yeah. I would ask you this. And
you want Sybil to talk, not John. Okay.
I want Sybil to know, like any rock-hard diamond, you put the right cut on it, and I'll take a hammer and smash it into dust.
If you can, they are absolutely determined. That's why I said to Gwen today on the phone earlier today, I said Paul McCartney was in Central Park yesterday. If some NRA nut had assassinated him in front of national television, if someone had shot one of the kids, the Parkland kids, the wonderful kid that you mentioned earlier, if up on stage he had been shot and killed by an NRA nut, only that would have brought the guillotine blade down on the NRA and on the whole GOP corruption thing, and it would, and maybe even Trump. But it would take something that nationally
drastic,
galvanize that middle group of people who still think that anything that Trump does is okay. Look, you guys, we still have women who support Donald Trump angrily. Thrilled to support
but
him.
Much less, many less. A lot
he's lost quite a bit
women
there, thank God.
Yes, you're right, guys, but not enough.
30% of them. He could never get the numbers he did before.
You know what? I know we're running out of time. I'm going to tell you something. I learned my lesson, and I knew it beforehand. That election with Hillary Clinton, I used to say, do not take anything for granted. She's not. When people say, oh, she's 14 points ahead, I used to say, oh, dear God, stop saying that. Ken Ahura, don't say that, because she doesn't care. She knew. Listen, Hillary Clinton sat beside Bill Clinton and Al Gore in the year 2000 on that election night.
Yeah,
and she saw what happened that night, and she saw how Florida took the election and gave it to George Bush, and how we plunged into 8 years of inarticulate whatever.
Yeah.
She did not take that for granted. And though she seemed surprised, she was frightened to death that too many Democrats would not go to the polls. She was afraid that people would take it for granted. She was afraid of Jill Stein's votes and that idiot Gary Johnson's votes. She was worried. And look what, Gary, what's Aleppo Johnson? A moron. A moron. Jill Stein.
Yeah.
A modern woman. An idiot. So anyway, back to this. We all know we have to register and vote for November. And I hear all these people saying, well, we're going to wipe them clean in November. We're going to get rid of
them. No, don't take it for granted, guys.
I'm so with you. Knock wood.
Absolutely.
Everyone that can register and vote and who cares must do it, because otherwise we'll be stuck with two more years of Trump and McConnell.
I will be out there with a clipboard again registering people to vote. I have done it every election for the last 10 years. I got back into it. I was in sit-ins and ACT UP in New York when the AIDS crisis was going on. I was going to school up at Cornell. I went down, was doing some time at Columbia. I got involved with the AIDS activists, and we did a sit-in. And, again, the kids, you know, they're all right. I can remember a mounted cop spit on me when I was in that sit-in. It took everything in me not to reach up, haul stirrup, and haul him down. But I knew that's what they wanted. That's what they wanted. And so I followed Bella Abzug to the goddamn, I loved Bella. I didn't agree with her Zionism, but I loved Bella. And she marched us from a woman's meeting all the way up to the South African embassy, where we chanted and got billy clubbed and stuck in the paddy wagon for chanting against apartheid. I remember that, and we were kids. And that's who's leading it. And that's it's the bright light is beginning to shine. These kids are fucking amazing.
Yeah, they're going to lead the way. There's no doubt. And I applaud them all the way, and I'm very supportive of them. And I'm going to take this opportunity to remind everybody to keep pushing forward. We cannot live in the past any longer. And these troglodytes like Trump have got to go.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I want to also remind everybody to look forward to finding Sybil Brunchen, a.k.a. John Burke, and his show and podcast here in the future, and we'll let you know in plenty of time. Wayne was actually out there with the kids in Ohio yesterday.
Cool.
He was.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for asking me, for being here today.
John,
it
was very nice talking
three.
With you, and we're looking forward to the future, my friend. Keep up the good work.
Well, I can't wait. Yeah, and I'll see you all at SybilSays.com and SybilBrunchen.com and Facebook, and I'll be advertising our new show with Gwen very soon.
Sounds great, man. All the best to you. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll look forward to talking on next Sunday's show.
Bye-bye.
Take care, everybody.
Yep, you too, John. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And so this has been Here Be Monsters, the Sunday show with our political roundtable with Wayne Johnson, the Minds and Times of F. Wayne Johnson's blog, and Jack Jodell with Saturday Afternoon Post over at WordPress blog. And the program, our sponsor is Saturday Afternoon Post and Daughters of ISIS. www.thefragrantmemories.com, where you'll find the fragrant memories of our ancestors. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next Sunday at 6 p.m. Thanks, Jack.
Thanks, Gwen. Thanks, Wayne. Talk to you again. Have a good week.
And thank you. And thank you, Sybil, for being here. That was great. Great. Okay. Good night.